would like to begin today by acknowledging the Wanneroo people as the traditional custodians of the land in which we are recording today, and would like to pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. Hey, I'm Carly.
And I'm Paige.
Welcome to another episode at Valley Village Collective Podcast.
The podcast where we dive into the heart of motherhood, bringing you relatable stories from local mums and insights from local practitioners.
Get ready for some real talk as we listen, learn, and navigate the adventure of motherhood together. You'll experience some aha moments and a whole lot of love and support.
This is Valley Village Collective Podcast. Let's get into today's episode. Hi, Carly. How's your week been?
Hi, Paige. Yeah, good, thanks. We have just gotten back from Perth during the week with the kids. So it was such a great time, really special moments, but hectic. You know, three kids on a flight where they're confined to a seat, and you know, planes don't have those in-flight entertainments on the back of the seat anymore. They don't offer food that's free. I mean, even though it's not that great anyway, but it's about being like having a bag full of snacks, downloading all the things on the iPad and every device that you possibly have, trying not to let Bluey play too loudly to all the other, you know, people on the plane. So that it definitely made for some interesting times. My 2 and 3-year-old have decided that they love to just squeal at one another, which is also really fun on a plane, and trying to stop that from happening is, you know, not as easy as a person who doesn't have children may seem. So that was fun. I actually had a little bit of a woman behind me on the plane make a little comment about, oh, this is going to be a long flight, when my 2-year-old decided to start squealing. And I was just like trying my hardest not to comment. Everything inside my body was like saying, like, oh, she's got no idea, or, you know, all those, like, you know, try and be in my shoes kind of defensive things. But I just kind of breathed through those emotions and thought, you know what, that's her problem. I can't, like, my kid just needs to be a kid right now, obviously within, like, kind of, you know, reason. And so I just had to let that one go. And actually it turned out to be okay in the end. So we're back, and oh, I cannot wait for school to return and everyone to be back into routine next week. So yeah, that's me. How about yourself?
Yeah, God, that is insane. First off, I just want to say, well done. That's amazing. And I don't know, I think people have this thing, especially on planes, where they think babies should, or kids should be seen but not heard. So that's really frustrating. And you did really well to not snap, because I would have said something not so nice. But anyway, yes, my week, I can't even remember what my week's been like. I've mainly just been looking in the future. I'm not going to say looking forward to, but I go back to work next week. So the day after this episode is released, I'll be on my first day back at work, and I've got mixed feelings about it. I suppose, I don't know, most of the last week I've been like, oh, I can't wait until Tuesday comes along. Like, Hudson's just been so fussy, and I don't know, I feel like it's going to be nice to maybe come home and feel refreshed after not listening to crying all day, and just trying to look forward to the simple things like having a coffee and, you know, listening to a podcast, because I usually do that while I'm on the computer at work, and, you know, talking to adults. But the other side of the feelings is I'm really nervous about going back. Like, he's just going to be with my husband. So he's not going to daycare, but I'm still really nervous. And I know that, like, he's going to be fine. But for me, it's like not having control of the day, I think. Like, I've been his sole person for 11 months by the time I go back to work. You know, I've got to decide what he eats at every meal. I've got to decide what time he goes to sleep and what time he wakes up and what activities we do during the day. And to have someone else have that control is like really hard to let go of. But then I suppose another side of it is like, I don't know, I have this thing about, what if he falls over or he gets sad about something and he looks around and he goes, where's my mum? She's left me. So like, that's just being really real. But yeah, like, I'm just like, I hope he doesn't think that like I've left him. And like, I don't know, like, I still love him and care about him, obviously. But that's just like my anxiety going through my head, is I'm like, what if he thinks I've left him forever? But yeah.
Yeah, that's so, that's so hard. I think when you were sort of talking about the list of things that, you know, thinking about what he's going to eat, what time he's going to sleep, the mental load that is relinquished from doing that just in small portions makes quite a difference to, it doesn't happen overnight, but I think over time, just not having to think about some of those things is actually quite a breath of fresh air. It's such an adjustment, and you know, I've done it 3 times now. It doesn't probably get easier by each kid because they each have their own needs, but yeah, just be gentle to yourself through this time because it is a massive shift for everybody in the family, including your husband, who now has to parent all day while you're at work.
So we asked, on the topic of me going back to work, I asked for some life hacks for making everyday life easier as a mum, because that's another thing that I'm quite stressed about, is that like I already can't handle day-to-day life, and then I'm going to be adding in 2 days of work as well. So I'm a bit nervous about that. My favorite one, which we did actually start doing this last week, but cooking up meals and pre-preparing meals so that when I get home from work, I don't have to cook. Like, that just sounds so good.
Yeah, so probably not necessarily directly falling back into going to work, but it does actually impact, because so mine's more so about sort of that child management, like night wake-ups when you are back at work. You obviously want to limit those as much as you can. Hard with the baby, but once you sort of move into those toddler years, you hope that they're sort of getting more solid sleep. And one thing for me that I found really useful, especially like when I had a toddler and a baby, is trying to minimize those night wake-ups from my toddler who was like toilet training. So obviously, like all kids develop at different stages, but in the last 6 to 12 months, I've my second child was actually quite easy to toilet train. My first was a little bit more trickier. So what I found, she actually did so great at night training. Like it wasn't even like training, but I was very used to probably thinking like with my first, I'd have to be up quite a lot changing sheets, like not frequently, but more than what I wanted to be. But you sort of also want to keep persisting with that. So mine is, you know, through those, that night toilet training, once you get to the point where you want to give it a go, what you want to do is layer the bed with a mattress protector. So obviously you have your mattress protector, then your puppy pad, and then a fitted sheet. And then you want to go back to mattress protector, puppy pad, and fitted sheet. So you've got like essentially 2 full sets on that bed. And so instead of then when they've wet the bed through the night and they come to you and say, "Oh, wet the bed," like, you know, you're not having to get a whole set of sheets out of the cupboard and you're changing sheets. I'd make my oldest sit on the middle of the floor when she was little and have to like remake the bed. But at least with this method, you can just strip that whole mattress protector, like from mattress protector up, and then you've still got the whole next layer to go. So it actually really alleviates some time, and you can, they're straight back into bed, or change, wipe them down, and then straight back into bed. So that kind of just makes things a little bit quicker, and yeah, you'll thank yourself in the middle of the night for that one. So I know you're not quite there yet, but for the listeners who are, and you will be in the future, I recommend doing that.
So we were also going to chat today about we are taking a break. So we are just taking a 2-week break from posting episodes, which obviously means we'll be taking a little bit of a break from Instagram on like when we post our highlight reels and our episode titles. Obviously, we're still going to be posting some other stuff and have something really exciting coming as well while we're off. But we will be back available in your ears with some new episodes on the 20th of May.
I think this is episode 11. Paige and I sort of plan to do about 10 or so episodes, and then just find a little bit of a moment where we can sort of take a bit of a break just to disconnect a little bit, and sort of replan, I guess, for what the next little time period looks like. So yeah, you can expect these at from time to time throughout the year. We are doing that. Now we might get into introducing our guest for today. So we have Dr. Kelly Beanland. So she is the chiro, the owner and chiropractor at Hunter Healthy Spines. So Kelly today talks us through chiropractic care and whether it's safe for the family. And she really delves into treating pregnant women, postpartum women, and also what the deal really is with tummy time. So we hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, Kelly, and welcome to Valley Village Collective. How are you today?
Fantastic. Thank you both for having me.
No worries at all. We just thought we'd start by allowing you to introduce yourself, where you're based, where your business based, and who's in your family.
No worries. I'm a local chiropractor, so I have the pleasure of working in the Hunter Valley. We've been in East Maitland. I've been there for just around 5 years now, and I've been a chiropractor for almost 12, which feels like a really long time. I've been servicing the Hunter Valley for the last 5 years. I see a lot of pregnancy, pediatrics, babies, kids, families, adults. We see everyone at our practice. So our business is Hunter Healthy Spines, and I'm lucky enough to work alongside two fantastic chiros, James and Prue, and our beautiful reception team. I have a husband, so Gareth, and a beautiful daughter, Lucy. So she's now almost 17 months old. And I have two puppies as well. So they've been around the longest. Asher and Alfie, yes.
Yes, I love it. You can never forget the fur babies. They're always the first ones.
No, Asher was the first one, and our family has grown since then.
Yeah. So Kelly, I thought we'd just start by just introducing the role of the chiropractor in related to pregnancy, postpartum, maternal care.
Yeah, sure. No worries. Look, chiropractic has had a journey over the years. We know that it's great for holistic care and the balance and the function of the body. And it's more of a holistic way of looking at mechanics, I find. So if you go to a chiropractor, generally if you're going in for a pain syndrome of some respect, that's how a lot of people get introduced to chiropractic care. They're generally focusing on the whole system and looking at the whole body function, as opposed to, say, just that lower lumbar spine where you might be experiencing your pain. We look after pregnant women in the same way. Instead of just focusing on the hips or the pelvis, or if they're experiencing pubic symphysis dysfunction, we're generally looking at how that woman moves through gravity and through her day, and how that uterus is growing and developing and intuitively functioning with that pelvis as one big system. So the role of the chiropractor is to restore that function and restore the balance of that system to the best of its innate capacity.
Yeah, what I get from that is making a woman feel comfortable and everything sort of happening in her body that just sort of puts her at ease, I suppose, in relation to pregnancy.
Yeah, that's it. So basically your pelvis is like the foundations for the rest of your body. The uterus itself is a beautiful big organ or structure or fibrous being, however you want to describe it. We've got beautiful descriptors for our uterus. But the pelvis really guides and influences how much tension that uterus can hold. So I often use an analogy that if you imagine your uterus is like a tent, and we have these big guide ropes from a tent that stabilize into the ground, the pelvis is your grounding, okay, and you've got the ground where the tent sits. And if you've got these beautiful big guide ropes stabilizing into that pelvis, if you pull on one guide rope, so if the ground is unlevel and you've got one guide rope tighter than another, and you're starting to see that imbalance, you'll see that distortion through the tent. You can imagine if you're all camping fans, you've now got this disordered asymmetrical tent. So you've got one side of the roof that's lower than the other, we've got one higher section higher than the other. And if you imagine that's where baby is sitting, it's going to really change how baby can move evenly through the pelvis and evenly through the uterine cavity. If the baby's getting caught over one side, often a lot of women say, oh, baby's just sitting on the right all the time, or I get a lot of right SI pain because baby's sitting on the right all the time. If we can stabilize and change and balance how that ground is, so those guide ropes, the ligaments of the uterus are nice and loose and supple, that uterus can work in a nice symmetrical open way as opposed to that distortion.
I guess so we can just understand what's happening to our bodies when we come and see you, when we come and see a chiropractor. You know, you go in, you hear those lovely cracks. What's actually happening in our bodies? Like, I've always wondered that it's not our bones.
Sure.
Like, what is that cracking noise coming from? What's it actually working on to make those changes with the tent poles?
Yeah, no worries. So cracking is one of those terms that's been associated with chiropractic care for a really long time. Basically, manual adjusting has been the foundations for our profession, but we're so blessed and so lucky that chiropractic has changed so much over the last 100 years. So we've been around for over 100 years now, and there's over 200 techniques within chiropractic alone, and I'm blessed enough to practice at least 10 or more. And I utilize a toolkit that is unique to the patient that's on my table. So the care that Carly might receive would be different to the care that Paige would receive. So cracking per se is not necessarily something that every patient receives, because particularly pregnant women, like, we've got this hormonal fluctuation, you've got relaxin playing a part, you've got this joint stability aspect that you have to be super, super aware of. So cracking or heavy-handed work necessarily isn't appropriate for every woman that's on my table. Manual adjusting is so super powerful because it gives ultimate and, how do I say it, the biggest way we can activate the brain, because it's a big input into the spine. But to answer your question, Paige, that actual physiological response is air escaping from a joint. When we start to get something to move, you get that physiological release. So when you guys practice yoga, you sometimes feel a crack or a release. We call those incidental releases. Obviously, what I'm doing is we're focusing on something that's more specific. We're looking for the area that's not moving well to get it functioning in a nice, open, and symmetrical way. Yeah.
I really like that, Kelly, in relation to sort of supporting the pelvis, because my doula trainer has this quote that's helping women get into optimum condition so baby has room to get into optimum position. So it's not about changing the positioning of the baby as such, it's about supporting the pregnant woman to actually allow that space and function properly to move through that pelvic area when they birth. So you've hit that right on the head. So yeah, I really like that. So just we've touched on pregnancy already, which is obviously such a big part of sort of why we're like the realm of this podcast. But chiropractic care, is it safe for all family members as a baseline? And then if you can maybe just also discuss, you've sort of talked about pregnancy, but can we also talk about postpartum as well? So whatever way around you want to do that, that's fine.
Yeah, no worries at all. Basically, the big part of chiropractic care that comes to mind when we think of safety, a lot of people are concerned when it comes to kids and children. And we were so lucky that 5 years ago, we actually had a government-funded review performed for us by Safer Care Victoria. And the results from that review were amazing. We were so lucky that we had the biggest public input for a review of its type ever. And there were thousands and thousands of families and parents and patients alike that chose to respond to this Safer Care review. And from that review, mixed in with some other previously done, I quote Angela Todd in 2015, she did a fantastic literature review of any adverse events for pediatric care within chiropractic. And within that review, she also explored any other manual therapists, so craniosacral therapists, physiotherapists, osteopaths, chiropractors, and bringing all that literature together she actually came to the conclusion that there was no adverse events linked to any chiropractic care, which was fantastic. Adverse events, obviously, serious adverse events, I should quote. Adverse events obviously can be anything from muscle soreness, which would take 24 hours to get over, heat pack, you'll be okay, to something more serious. So there was nothing serious in the literature review, which was fantastic, and only a very small handful linked to any manual therapy across the world, which was amazing. And any of those events were linked to any previous conditions that could have added to that adverse event happening. But chiropractors are fortunate enough to undergo 5 years university training, and that's looking at standard family care. And then you've got chiropractors like myself. I choose to specialize in children and pregnancy, so I can't think of the amount of hours that I've done to specialize in such a field. But chiropractors that change their approach when they're looking at an adult to a baby or an infant and they do age-appropriate care are actually deemed to be very, very safe, which we're incredibly proud of as a profession.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks for clarifying that, because I think, when I sometimes mention to people about, you know, have you thought about a chiropractor as part of your care team? And this might not just be in relation to their baby, but also their children. Sometimes you sense that, like, bit of a recluse, kind of like, oh, I don't know about that, because I think, you know, that cracking is like something that people just associate with chiropractors, and obviously, like, you know, I understand that that's not the case, but it's that debunking any myths or preconceived like thoughts about how the treatment may go. So yeah, I think that's so important to clarify. Thank you for that.
That's all right. And I think, like, what you just picked up on then, Carly, awesome, is what's age appropriate, like, and what kind of technique are we doing? Like that cracking style of, and I'll use inverted commas because not everyone can see probably listening, but that cracking style of care, it's not even something we use with all adults, let alone children. No. So a beautiful analogy that I'd like to share with your listeners is if you think about the amount of pressure you use to test the ripeness of a tomato when you're in Woolies or the markets, that's the amount of pressure we're using with infants and babies, okay? And then it's gently graded up as that child gets older, but it's also what their nervous system needs on that day. Like, I might only be using that amount of pressure for a pregnant woman because that's all their nervous system can tolerate on that day, or that's all their body can take on that day. All we're using is basically the amount of influence or pressure that I need to get an effect. So, and obviously that changes from physiology to physiology. If you think of a round ligament, you guys know how tender they can get. Like, you're not going to want to be doing a hell of a lot of pressure on something like that.
And I can speak from personal experience with that exact situation. I saw a chiropractor throughout my pregnancy, and then when my son was born and he was like 2-3 weeks old, he had quite a stiff neck, tongue tie, lip tie, and hated the car. Lots of people were suggesting to me, oh, have you thought about a chiropractor? And I was like, like, I thought I was going to go and take my 3-week-old baby and they're going to, you know, be cracking him. And then anyway, I finally decided, no, I'm going to do it. And I was very surprised with how gentle it is. I was very pleasantly surprised. But yeah, I guess just to put anyone's mind at ease that is putting it off because they're worried that it's going to hurt their baby, it was, like you said, very gentle, like testing the ripeness of a tomato. It was, and like,
yeah, that's a beautiful analogy. Yeah. No, we're so fortunate to have this massive toolkit, and you basically just cater for that age and type of person that's on your table.
So Kelly, what about postpartum visits for a woman?
Yeah. Sorry, I left that out. I do remember you telling me. Postpartum, what a delicate time, hey? You know, postpartum can go anywhere from 6 weeks to 3 months, 6 months, depending on, do we have ab separation? Do we have ongoing pubic issues? Do we have ongoing pelvic pain? Do we have pelvic floor activation? Do we have complete obliterated pelvic floor? So it's such a delicate time. I would love to give like, yeah, this is exactly what we do for postpartum, but every woman, like every birth, every pregnancy, so different, catered to the hormonal fluctuations of that woman, all the factors I just mentioned, very gentle, very stabilizing based. So we're looking at, are we getting activation through that pelvic floor? Are we getting things back on track? Are we able to activate our core? How are we working to breastfeed? Like, hello, breastfeeders, back, neck, shoulders, headaches, all this stuff is so, so important to maintain the comfort of the mother, because if you're uncomfortable as a mother, you're not going to want to sit there and breastfeed. You're not going to want to sit there and side or lie down even and side lie. That can be really painful because a lot of these positions, these mothers aren't used to. If you're first time, my first time breastfeeding, oh my God, I've never been in so much pain because just not used to sitting down, not used to being in a position where I've got this little person and I can't move. And but I'm adoring them as well, so I'm looking down at them all the time. So coming back to what we sort of talked about like at the start, that holistic view to give the best care for that mother and baby is my approach. Yeah,
wonderful, wonderful. Such a gentle time as well. So needed. So if we sort of move on to today, we're talking a lot about normal newborn development and how tummy time is really beneficial. But what we might just do first is cover off some of those most common reasons parents bring their babies to a chiropractor. Paige touched on a few before. Yes. If you want to revisit those, because I think some of them were actually super important and a lot of conversations that I have exact reasons. So yeah, can we sort of go back and sort of cover off some of those topics?
100%. Look, what Paige said would be a very, very typical presentation that I would see. Stiff neck, cranky in the car, colic, like that unsettledness, or, you know, when it gets really bad, that's sort of labeled purple crying. Just that never wanting to be put down, which we know is newborn behavior. But there's a difference between, oh my God, I'm uncomfortable being laid down, to I just want to cuddle. And, you know, you guys being mothers and a lot of our listeners being mothers, you know the difference of what that sounds like. And you know when your baby's not comfortable. Not liking the pram, not liking the carrier, not attaching well and feeding. So a lot of my antenatal mums that I'm checking up to their birth is I really try to educate them on what a normal latch should feel like and what they should be expecting, and really encourage them to do a lot of breastfeeding preparation so they can reach out to me within those first few days to get their baby's oral function happening. The quicker that happens, the quicker we can map the brain and get that suck, swallow, breathe reflex and that coordination happening. So chiropractic plays a really important role in gentle cranial work and cranial function, which is amazing work. Just look different postures, like what Paige was saying, seeing babies favored over to one side with their neck can influence how their cranial system's working. If their cranial system is getting pressure on one side, that's going to create a deformation through the skull because their skull is so, so delicate in those first 3 months. So we call that plagiocephaly or flat head. So I see a lot of babies with that. Developmental, like what you've said, Carly, just leading back into that, hating tummy time or not wanting to extend and lift their head. And, you know, as we work down the track of developmental milestones can lead to developmental delay. So depending where I might see that child, if I'm seeing them in the start, might present as not loving tummy time. And, you know, unfortunately it can progress to, you know, not really wanting to crawl or show any interest in moving and those types of things. So depending the age, we see some different presentations there.
Yeah. And can I just add to Kelly, you mentioned just before, you know, a mother usually knows the difference between like a, you know, really unsettled baby who is unsettled or wants a cuddle. Some mothers don't straight away. It takes time to learn that. And it's so, I just want to say that if you're listening to this and you have a, you know, a 2, 3, 4 week old baby that's still trying to work you're still trying to get to know one another. This might be your first. And because I know it's so hard with your first, you've never done this before. You've got so many emotions going through your body, yourself, trying to make a decision that makes sense or that isn't rash or anything like that. It's so difficult. So if you feel like you don't know your baby right now, just know that that is absolutely okay. What I would encourage you to do is tap into your instincts. And that's a hard thing to do, I know, but think about your, ask yourself the question, do I think that this is not okay? Am I getting an inkling that something more could be the problem, or do I need to seek further advice? Because, and if the answer to that question is yes, but I don't know what that looks like, then just go and open up that conversation with a health professional or with somebody, because hopefully you find someone really supportive like Kelly, who is able to then, you know, move through the steps to provide that support for you. Or if she can't, go somewhere else and further, you know, whether that's a lactation consultant, whether that's, you know, XYZ person. But I just want to say that it's okay if you don't quite understand your baby's cry right now, or you don't know what they need, but just try and tap into that intuition and think, well, something's not quite right. I need further advice and I need further help. So I just want to make that note now. Yeah.
Yeah, I can definitely attest to that as well. Like, I remember people saying my baby had purple crying or colic, but I still kept searching for an answer, even though, like, you know, I could have been like, oh, okay, that's it, I'll just deal with it. But something was telling me to keep searching for an answer. And I remember before he was born, people would say, oh, you'll just know what he wants. And then when he was born and I had no idea, I was like, oh, my God, what am I doing wrong? I remember I had this app on my phone where you record their crying and it's supposed to tell you what's wrong with them. So I was really worried that I was doing something wrong. But, yeah, if you feel like the answers that you've gotten, you're still searching for more answers, you probably do need more answers.
Yeah, just to tie back into that, Carly, thanks for just bringing that up, because I suppose what I was more focusing on is just for mums, really focus on your intuition. I think a lot of mums come to me after they've been told so many times, oh, it's okay, that's normal, babies cry. Yeah. And that's just heard so much, and a lot of them have sat on maybe seeking that further support, like what you're saying, Carly and Paige, for probably too long. They question themselves, which I really like to empower my patients to. If you know something's not right, something's probably not right. Your mum, you're learning your baby, but those mummy feels like, they're so instinctive, and if you've got it in your guts that something's not going well for you and your bub, we're so lucky you've created this village. There's so many health professionals that we can lean on, and your beautiful postpartum circles. So reach out if it doesn't feel right. That's all I keep saying to my patients. Yeah,
spot on, great advice. So what sort of things are you looking for in normal newborn development when a parent brings their baby in? What sort of testing do you do? What are you looking for, it's particularly like in that first consultation and then moving forward?
Yeah, sure. Look, we might focus, because obviously it's age dependent, so I'll speak quite generally, if that's okay with you ladies. Yep. And if you've got any questions like further into a particular age group, I'm happy to address it. If a baby's coming in, obviously we're focusing on where they're at within that age. Obviously a baby that's 3 or 4 months, we're expecting to have decent head control. And, you know, when I do a tonal check of their muscles, they've got some engagement there. Obviously a baby that's only a week old isn't going to have that same type of response. So we're looking at general tone. Like, tone gives us a lot of information about how the neurology of that baby is developing. It's that saying, and I think Jim Beru uses it quite a lot, which I love, is if we don't use it as adults, we lose it. If babies don't use it, they never gain it. So that's so, so important when you start to think about how that brain is starting to grow and to change. The magical thing about extension tone is it completely maps those what we call sensory motor pathways. So sensory is what we get from our environment and motor is movement. So this beautiful thing such as tummy time is magical. You're getting sensory feedback straight away just from being on the ground. You're getting this feedback through your hands to develop the arches for fine motor control just by placing their hands on the ground. They're starting to develop what we call their secondary curve, because when we're born, we're in the fetal position. If everyone imagines this fetal position, when we lift our head within those first 2 months, that's when we start to develop our secondary curve. And that first milestone of lifting that head develops a what we call a visual writing reflex about where our brain gets feedback about where our head and eyes are in space, which is just amazing. And once they start to lift their head in those first 2 months, they start to get a map of their world. So they've completely started to get this visual storm. And you think about it, like their vision really starts to come into play around that 6 to 8 week mark. They're starting to get this sensory barrage of information just from lifting their head. There's this beautiful part of the brain called cerebellum. And the cerebellum is a movement part of the brain. It's a massive battery regulator that gives information to your higher brain or your higher cortex. This is what makes us adults different from kids. And how cool is this? 240% of development is done within the first year of that cerebellum. And it mostly comes from extension tone, which is being on your tummy and lifting through your back. So if you're lifting through your back and your neck and your shoulders, the way a baby does right before they start crawling on tummy time is what will fire that battery, which I just find is just completely amazing.
Yeah, that's incredible. Yeah. Mm. So Kelly, we did want to touch on tummy time. So just while we're on the topic, it's so fascinating what you've just said. And I just want to clarify or confirm from you as a professional, when I see some mums, you know, and they've got babies that are really colicky and they just can't be put down. So the thought about doing tummy time just seems just so far in the distance because they can't even get them like laying down on their back, let alone on their tummy. And I know, you know, we can start up in small increments, but is a reclined position on a mother's chest with the opportunity for the baby to lift their head, or in the front pack with, you know, that sort of extension, like in that head control, is that enough? Like, is that okay? Or is it something better than nothing? Or would you prefer to see a baby on the floor with a towel, you know, rolled up under them? Like, what's your suggestion?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I love your analogy there. Something's better than nothing. Definitely. Okay. Because we've got to get these kids moving. We've got to get these kids extending and building that neck strength. I'll go back to it, but there's, you know, those kids that come out like literally wired and ready to go. Like, that's not necessarily a good thing either. Because they're in this wind up state where their body is just in this extension all the time, and that creates that tenseness for the nervous system because it fires up what we call your sympathetics, which is your fight flight. So if we go back to your original question, we've got to really start to look at, well, where's that baby at and what do they need? So if that baby is within the first 2 weeks, that chest tummy time and looking up at mum, perfect. Oxytocin, love, bonding, eye contact, connection, smells, I'm on mum, generally going to be a lot happier. They're going to want to lift and look at this, all their world right in front of them. So that's fantastic. When it comes to being in carriers, is that what you meant by front pack, Carly? Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
yeah. So carriers are amazing. They create I sort of think of it like a vertical strength or extension tone or a vertical control, which plays a part in developing the postural muscles. But when they're really, really little, we really do need to have them more in that reclined position so they can literally just get that head lift going. Because if they're not getting that head lift, it's very hard to develop that postural control. If you imagine a baby in a carrier, difference between say a 4 month and a 4 week old, you've got that slouch in the neck. They haven't developed that postural control to keep their head up in a stable position. So anything better than nothing. We use a few techniques in our practice that I coach parents through. The knee tummy time is great, putting them on your knee. Dads are good at that one as well. Carrying them over your arm, over your forearm. I utilize a fit ball as well because it's around a softer platform as opposed to a hard floor on their chest. They might struggle with that. The rocking, we can talk more about this if you want to, the rocking aspect of fit ball rocking is great for sensory feedback. I think of it like tummy time with bonus time with the movement as well. It's fantastic. Chest time, you've already said, amazing. If we just add in incidental episodes of tummy time, so it's not like a structured, rigid, I've got to do this for 10 minutes every day and everyone gets stressed out about it, I find those babies and mums go a little bit better. Yeah,
integrating it into just everyday life feels a lot more easy when there's so many different thoughts and worries and stresses flowing through a mother's body at that time.
Yeah.
So, Kelly, is there anything more that you're looking for when you are, you know, doing an assessment or what you're searching for in normal newborn development?
Yeah, definitely. So when we see a baby on the table or in mum's arms or how they present, we start them on their back and we're looking at just general engagement and where their sensory systems are at. Depending on the age, obviously their visual engagement can be very different. Can they hear? We want to make sure they're taking note of their environment as well, because all of these senses give feedback to the brain. Everything we do in our office is always that forethought of how is this baby functioning to give the brain the best outcome for development in the future. We then look at what we call primitive reflexes. Primitive reflexes are beautiful reflexes that we have within our nervous system to keep us alive and survive and thrive within the first 12 months of life. So we want to make sure these primitive reflexes are present when they are meant to be present and have integrated or are absent when they are meant to be absent. These primitive reflexes are amazing and they can give us ideas on how that progressive nervous system is developing in a building block type of fashion. If we're missing blocks, we can see alterations in how that child's nervous system is behaving and responding as they get older. We're looking for also balance and symmetry within their muscle system and how their body is working. My chiropractic team are very big on checking hips, shoulders, wrists, and ankles. We want to make sure the birth process hasn't affected any of those major joint systems, which can affect their function. We touched briefly on oral function, which I could do a whole episode on, but just to give you a brief understanding, the sucking reflex, the rooting reflex, how the tongue is moving. We do a full intraoral assessment for the sucking reflex for that baby, how the jaw tension is responding and how well the cranial system has responded potentially to a physiological birth or C-section, because these babies can present a little bit differently. We have the molding and then we have the basically the extension or the rebound effect of those cranials and how that baby can then migrate from birth to then being a fully functioning attaching baby at the breast is our ideal situation. Full neck function is also assessed. So we want to make sure baby can see evenly or move their head evenly side to side. We know that full breastfeeding requires full motion of the neck or the cervical spine, i.e. if you're feeding on the right breast, you're going to need to turn all the way to the left. If you're favoring one way, obviously that baby might favor one breast over the other. If they're favoring one breast, we get better supply on one side and then it can create that cascade as well. But they're general things we're looking at, and then checking the tone, like I mentioned earlier, So their head control and how their strength is responding as they get older within that first 12 months of life.
Could someone come and see you if they are concerned that their baby might have a tongue tie for oral assessment? Is that something that you do?
Yeah, so our team is fully trained in tongue tie. It's an ever-evolving, shall I say, topic, and the research is always changing. We've got a beautiful lactation consultant, Emma, which you guys are a big fan of as well. Her and I will work closely together with James and Prue. So we aim to restore the function and potentially work to change the adaptions of that mouth. If there is a tongue tie, it's obviously going to affect how the jaw's working, how much tension there is in the mouth, how the jaw's going. So the fantastic thing about body work or cranial specific intraoral chiropractic care is that we can influence everything that tongue tie is potentially having a effect on. So we do assess and we do collaborate with other professionals that work with tongue tie. But if any of your listeners have any concerns around tongue tie, we're more than happy to support that family the best way we can. Revision isn't always recommended. Every case is dependent. And I think it's best if parents, mothers can have the best supportive team and village around them when it comes to tongue tie, because it is quite a complex and in-depth topic.
Yeah. I think that's really good, because I think there's still a lot of question marks about who you can go and see about tongue ties and oral function. So it's really good to know that people can go to you and get that looked at.
I can, you guys can edit this out if you like, but my personal story is my daughter has a tongue tie, so she has a minor posterior tie, and I've been there where every first mum, do I do something about it? Do I not do something about it? Am I affecting my child's future? Is their speech going to be okay? Oh, sugar, she's not doing tummy time. Like, oh, she's struggling to get that head control in. I've been there. The tension that comes from a potential tie is all through the front of the neck and throat and jaw, that if a baby has all that tension, it's constantly pulling them down. They really do struggle to gain those lifts. And the first 12 weeks are hard. So having someone that can guide you through what is a reflection of normal, and that you're doing the best you can and you're getting the care and collaborative services that you need through this tough time is super, super important.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it helps make an informed decision as well, if you have someone that can tell you what's normal, what's not, and then you can go, okay, you know, we'll do this. So yeah, that's really great.
It's a tough topic. It's a tough stage.
Kelly, just circling back to tummy time, I'm not sure if there's anything more that you want to add in regards to tummy time, but I did just want to ask about types of births, so vaginal birth, cesarean birth. Does that impact a baby's normal development, their ability to enjoy tummy time? What can parents do if there has been a traumatic birth, and the, you know, even not maybe just related to tummy time, but also that flows through just general care?
Yeah, general function. That's a big point. C-section is becoming a little bit more common for a variety of reasons. We're seeing a little bit more of it. So there are some considerations I have when I have a baby that's born via C-section. If there's an emergency C-section, there's probably been some trauma or failure to progress or something that has impacted that mother to be able to birth physiologically. So we've got to take that into account. Was there heavy contraction on the head and how those cranials are working? Was there a lot of pressure through the hips and the shoulders and the neck to get the baby out by C-section? Were they stuck in the pelvis and they had to be reefed out? So all these factors can contribute to a baby's function. So I might circle back to this, but I'll give your listeners a bit of a toolkit that they can utilize to, if they want to reflect and have a look at their baby, they can run them through like a little bit of assessment in their head. The top things I look for, but that really gives us guidance on how much that baby might have suffered during birth, because birth's a tough process. With C-section, that baby hasn't necessarily had the molding and the activation of the cranial system and that first squeeze into the lungs and that squeeze into the jaw. I find babies that have been born by C-section are a little bit more lax in their suck and their oral attachment. It can just be a little bit harder to get it going. So if you have any concerns around oral function and sucking and C-section birth, that can be something definitely worth exploring. We do find with birth trauma, so forceps, vacuum, and anything where there is traction on the neck, that like what you experienced, Paige, the stiffness and that change of how that baby's neck is moving and functioning can play a part, and how much pressure was on the jaw as they passed through that birth canal. Any babies that had a lot of pressure around their hips, so whether it was an in utero position, I know we're just talking about birth, but if they were breech in utero or they might have been stuck and mum didn't feel that they were moving the best, I talk a lot about in utero tension as well, and that physiological birth process is so magical to unwind that baby as they come through that birth canal. So C-section babies can sometimes still maintain or retain a little bit more of that tension. So if you need support from a body worker or a chiropractor to help unwind that tension, you'll probably see some good changes in your bubba.
Mm. Yeah. Did you want to circle back to that little checklist that parents can do for just a little assessment there?
Yeah, no worries. So when you're looking at your baby, the fantastic thing you can do is when they're lying on their back, if you've ever reflected and you see a persistent pattern, if you think about a banana, like it curves off to the side either way, we call that dural tension if that banana shape is persistent. And that can impact cranial function, oral function, as well as hip tension and just general ability to do tummy time, because they're not rested in a straight, neutral, relaxed position, but they're more curved in that banana shape. So the banana test is a really good one. Just have a look down at bub in the bassinet and just see if they are in that sort of half moon curved position. The other one that's really big is talking to parents about, do they favor, and we briefly touched before, one breast over the other. If they're more inclined to love the right boob, I definitely would be checking them for neck cervical function and make sure their neck is moving well. Make sure their shoulder's moving well. So that's an easy assessment for mum to do as well. Reflecting on when they're in their bassinet, do they look one way versus the other? Are they always sleeping with their head to the right or to the left? Really easy assessment as well. And then coming back to, you know, the golden topic of the hour, tummy time, are they struggling with it? Is it something that you're not loving as a mum because the baby's not loving? We're here to help, and it's something that if you get onto it early, you're going to create this beautiful foundation for this brain to be able to develop in a sequential, strong and active way, as opposed to having to chase your tail if things aren't quite going right down the track.
Well, thank you so much for chatting with us today, Kelly. Is there any final, just last couple of points that you wanted to say before we wrap it up?
Yeah, no worries. Thank you so much, both of you, for having me. I've had the best time this morning. It's a unique experience to get to talk about what I'm so passionate about and hopefully inspire and empower our beautiful mothers in the Hunter Valley. Our practice doors are open 6 days a week. We're always here to listen and support any of our families. Even if you are new to the practice, we welcome you with open arms. As Carly said, our practice is Hunter Healthy Spines opposite the library on Garnet Road. She'll have details for you, I'm sure, but look, my ultimate goal is to give back to our community, and that's why I absolutely adore these girls and what they're doing, because I think it's absolutely fantastic. So my gift to all the women listening, if you choose to take advantage of it, if you just need support or you have any questions, particularly about if chiropractic care is something that could help either you, your family or your baby, please give us a call and just arrange a time to have a chat, 15-minute chat with me. It's a complimentary chat. I'm happy to answer any preliminary questions you might have if you're unsure about necessarily coming in for a full appointment, and we can make a time to sort that out for you. So that's my little gift. I hope that's something that will benefit our beautiful community, and we can all move forward with happy, healthy, thriving families.
And just, I guess, for anyone that is on the fence about it and, you know, on the fence about going and seeing Kelly, I think for me personally, seeing a chiropractor with my baby was life-changing. Like, there's nothing to lose. At 3 weeks old, I was going through constant crying in the car. I'd travel half an hour and I'd have to stop four times to get him out and give him a cuddle. I was crying. Like, it was so overwhelming, and chiropractors are just such a wealth of knowledge. And yeah, it was literally life-changing having chiropractic care. And, you know, from a couple of weeks after getting the adjustments, he was sleeping in the car all the time. The favored right boob was gone. The, you know, everything was so much better. So yeah, for anyone that's on the fence, there's nothing to lose. It was life-changing.
No, it's amazing. And for what, like you said, Paige, for the amount of intervention, it's very, very small for the massive gains. Like, you can't put a price on that, or you can't put a like, you know, nipple trauma, favored right boob, crying in the car. Like, I think any mum would want to be free of those issues for sure. At least have support if it is something that's going to hang around, which we are always there to be a listening board, as well as, yeah, hopefully fix a few of the issues that are going on. But we can never guarantee, but we're always there to help.
Yeah, happy, healthy babe, happy mum. Well, thank you so much, Kelly, for joining us. It's been a wonderful chat with you this morning, wealth of knowledge. And yeah, I really definitely encourage everyone to take Kelly up on that offer, even if you are, like Paige said, on the fence. She's a fantastic person, great advocate for women's health in our community. So yeah, please give Hunter Healthy Spines a call. Thanks, Kelly.
Thanks, Carly. Thanks, Paige.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Valley Village Collective Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and feel more supported in your journey through motherhood, or even just put a smile on your face today.
Before you go, it would mean the world to us if you hit the follow button so you don't miss an episode, leave us a review if you liked today's episode, and find us on Instagram at Valley Village Collective. See you next week.